Welcome to North Shore Sports Night on this Monday night late in May. I'm Rick Moore along with Tim Kearns tonight, our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky. Bill Newell always helping out. We appreciate that. And we have a full shoe tonight. You can punch that screen up if you want to. We're going to have a couple of guests. I'm not sure what order we'll be doing it, but we've got a couple interviews already that we'll replay or we'll play back. We're going to be talking with Winthrop High School hockey coach Dale Dunbar, who is also an NHL agent and has met and worked with Taylor Hall. So we'll get some information from Coach Dunbar about his perception on the Bruins and on the playoffs in general. We'll also be checking in at some point with Reggie Maidment, who is the high school baseball coach at Hamilton Wenham. Also, we've got our usual couple of guys here. We have a golf writer and sports historian Gary Larrabee, who will talk, I'm sure, about the PGA. And Mike Grenier will be stopping by as well. Main focus on the Celtics, but with other topics too. I pretty much took 3 days off. We went to North Conway on Friday with our daughter's godparents, and we met the person who's been hosting us and allowing us to use his condo twice a year for skiing over the last 25 years. Met him for the first time this weekend, and we just had a great weekend with things opening up, people being out more. Interestingly enough, I don't know, Tim, if you've been up at North Conway in the height of winter when the taverns such as May Kelly's, the Irish pubs, May Kelly's, and the like, you can't get in on a Friday night. And I'm talking about from any time from 4 p.m., 5 p.m. to midnight. You just can't. It's the old Yogi thing. Nobody goes there because it's too crowded. This time, we had dinner at 7, and we were out at 9, and we were the last people out. So it's beginning to get back, but we're also in between seasons too. This isn't what does they call this, off season till next week, I guess. But my point is that things are getting better.
At an Irish pub, typically there's no off season.
This is true. Why am I not hearing you? You got your mic on.
Is your wish finally come true?
I don't know what you're talking about. I have no idea. It's all right. Anyway, what's happening? What's on your mind?
Well, very excited and hopefully it pans out for the Patriots, but Julio Jones for N'Keal Harry and a third round draft.
Where'd you hear that?
It's been all over the Twitter sphere for the last day and a half, 2 days.
Well, I haven't seen anybody pull the trigger. I just checked it. Really?
Yeah.
Hmm. That's it for N'Keal Harry, huh?
Yeah. I mean, the kid's loaded potential. He came out of Arizona.
Yeah.
Oh my God! They raved about the kid's hands, the ability to make the catch in traffic, strong upper body, da 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 da. This, and then he just didn't really make the plays for the Pats. He made some. He kept showing flashes, but it was just never on a consistent basis. And so, of course, you know, if you can't make him on a catch on a consistent basis, his first year, you know, Tom Terrific doesn't have any faith in him. He's not going to throw the ball your way.
Mm-hmm.
So that sort of happened to him. The other thing was, and Gary's going to be gaga over this, was of course that Phil Mickelson.
Lefty.
You know,
lefty.
Held on to it to win the PGA.
I wasn't sure he was going to.
The oldest guy, and I'm sure there are a lot of lefty fans who had a little twinge in the ticker on the first hole. He bogeys and Koepka birdies to Tyree to take the lead. But Phil came right back and kept Kabogi and Phil birdied and took the lead back and then, you know, and held on. It was absolutely great showing on Phil's part. I mean, he had to be enthused for him. He led basically wire to wire.
Yeah.
And it's just, you know, we've always talked about Phil. Is he going to be able to win again? Does he have it anymore? Is the drive still there? Well, the drive was there in this particular tournament. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we'll see what it does for the rest of the season for him.
Yeah, I wasn't sure he was going to hang on. It was
ye of little faith.
Well, I'm not a particular fan of any golfer. Whoever wins, but I was sort of rooting for him, you know. But he had a 4-stroke lead there, and it boiled down to what, 1 or 2 at the end.
Yeah.
So you know, four holes to go, he's got a four stroke lead. It was nerve wracking. But anyway,
you know, if you play par golf those 4 holes, And somebody goes,
but he didn't. He bogeyed one.
I know what I'm saying, but somebody goes, birdie.
Yeah.
He's played better than you have, and he takes the tournament.
Oh, yeah.
And there's nothing that you can physically do to stop it.
Yeah.
Because it's golf is that really an individual sport where you're not playing so much your opponent. You're playing the course. And it's how capable are you of dominating the course and getting the best possible score. Then you get rated against the other guys who are trying to do the same thing.
And Lefty did it yesterday, so yes, we'll be talking with Gary about that. Celtics, Red Sox, they're doing okay. Red Sox doing okay. Bruins, outstanding. And I think what we'll do is we'll play Dale Dunbar's interview in just a second here, because it's really kind of interesting, especially when he talks about Taylor Hall and stuff. Bruins, really, I don't want to say dominating, but what a great series that was with Washington.
Yeah, that dropping the first one, they came back and they rip off four in a row just playing Bruins hockey and, being tenacious, sniping, making plays. It's what they, done for most of the season. But again, against a very talented Washington squad. Who am I?
Mm-hmm.
They got names that just keep rolling at you.
Yeah.
And if you got a guy named Ovechkin, he can win series all by himself, and they managed to keep him from doing that.
Yeah, they did. It kept him in check pretty well. There's some names on the Bruins now, too, that are pretty intimidating overall in terms of scoring and playing some D. We'll be back. This is North Shore Sports Night. We'll be back with Dale Dunbar, Winthrop High School hockey coach and NHL agent, in just a minute.
This season, start with a winning mortgage rate from your hometown team. Whether you are thinking about buying a new home or condo or refinancing your existing one, our loan rates are among the lowest anywhere. Check out our full menu of rates and terms and apply online 24/7 at institutionforsavingsloans.com. Institutionforsavings.com, member FDIC, DIF, equal housing lender.
Hi folks, this is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. And if you're planning to replace the windows in your home, I have just two words for you. Anderson Windows. Anderson is the most trusted name in windows throughout the United States. See the complete line of Anderson Windows on display at Moynihan Lumber in Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or visit us at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
All right, we're talking now some hockey with Winthrop High School hockey coach and NHL agent Dale Dunbar. And, Coach, welcome back. It's been a couple of months. How you doing?
I'm doing well, Rick. How you doing, buddy?
Excellent, man, excellent. It's this weekend was not hockey weather. But, I want to start with the Bruins because they've given us they've been a tease this season, I think. I don't know what you think, but it's like, boy, sometimes they play so good, and they don't really have big slumps. But I think that trade, when they picked up those three guys at the trade deadline, man, that just gave them a shot of adrenaline and extra energy. So what's your assessment of that trade, Coach?
Yeah, I mean, the group I work for out of Toronto, we represent Taylor Hall, so it's...
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's nice to have him down here. I ate dinner with him a couple of years ago when he was with Jersey. We were trying to do an extension there. And he's a nice kid. He's... He can play the game. That goal he scored, what game it was, it might have been game, three, when he pulled it to his backhand and roofed it late.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that was a pure goal scorer's goal. And, he's been a great addition. And I think, at this time of the year, it's all about putting the puzzle together. He's, without having to forego your future, but,
mm-hmm.
I think they did a great job getting Taylor. They tried to get him last year, I know that.
Right.
And at the last minute, Buffalo just offered more money. But he loves Boston. He wants to re-sign in Boston. So
great.
That's how it goes, but certainly got crazy going.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you. I was disappointed when they got Tyler Seguin, back when. But Krejci has taken a lot of grief this year, especially in the media. And when Hall got here on that wing, with Craig Smith, that line just started to produce. And tell me, Coach, from your perspective as a player and as a coach, what does that mean to get someone like him for both him and for his line mates?
Oh, it's huge. You know, I'm junior in Canada, major junior, you know, we needed to make a facelift. We needed to have a change. And, you know, some of the guys you have to give up, you know, it's too bad because, you know, you like them as people, you mm-hmm. like them as players, but you know, that's what you have to do to make your team better and possibly surround other guys with maybe a little bit more talent and skill. But, you know, if it means going and winning the cup, you have to make those, you have to add those pieces. And, I remember when we made the trade, you know, we got some great players back, but I gave up a first round draft in the NHL to get them.
Mm-hmm.
But it all worked out. We went on a ride that was, I think we were 18 unbeaten after
Whoa.
we made our trade. So sometimes that the trades you make, you know, versus the trades you don't make, they can both work for
mm-hmm.
or against.
Mm-hmm.
In this case, it's definitely worked for. And I think the pieces they added, were great because if you look what Washington tried to do and they loaded up.
Right.
Going for it, it didn't work. So now they've mortgaged a little bit. They're getting older. And, you know, again, that these trades that you make, they better be calculated and they better work because it does change the complexion of your team. And in this case for Boston, it's really, I think it's revitalized a few guys. And has maybe solidified a solid run here.
Yeah, and all three guys are contributing, which is really cool. And you know, it's been documented pretty well that Hall's energy and his talent has really lit up and energized Krejci, and they seem to almost have an instant chemistry connection there. So
it's worked for Taylor too, not just for Krejci, because Taylor only had two goals when he came here.
Right.
And then he had, I think he had like three goals in three games and like 7 points. And, you know, he got on fire. So it works for Taylor as well because that was a risky trade. If it doesn't work, you know, but it's revitalized both of them. You know, now they both have somebody they can give it and get it back and bury their chances. So I think it's worked out for everybody.
I want to get to the offense in a minute, Coach, but I want to ask you about the Bruins defense because I was a little nervous when they lost some key components, I think, in the offseason. And then, of course, Chara left a year ago. And you didn't know what – and Tuukka Rask after last, season in the bubble, you know, we didn't know what was going to happen. And as a layperson, I just wasn't too sure. So tell me your evaluation of the defense, because it seems to me that they're a little quicker, a little faster, but are they as good on defense as they should be? Let's put it that way.
Oh, I think they are. You know, they're young for the most part. You know, you've got McAvoy's really starting to come into his own as a, you know, not to, we know how good he is around here, but now he's really starting to get on the national stage. I really think, you know, he's maturing. And as a defenseman, you really don't mature until like your seventh or eighth year in the league before you can really go over the wall saying, you know, nothing's going to faze me and you're ready for every situation.
Mm-hmm.
He's doing it. You know, I think being thrown in the fire there when he left BU and joined the Bruins in the playoffs,
right.
You know, Chara took him under his wing. I think, you know, that helped him an awful lot to get that experience that early.
Mm-hmm.
And now he's a true solidified number one. And he's been great in all three zones. He's really pushing pucks up ice, jumping in. But I mean, he played almost 9 minutes on the penalty kill the other night, which is unheard of. I mean, that's ridiculous. And logging these minutes is only making him better. And I think, you know, everybody else feeds off that. I think Grizzlick's, you know, an undersized guy who moves the puck very well, great special teams guy. But, you know, he's another really good, smooth skating guy. And then you got Carlo and these other guys. I mean, they're solid. They're just gonna, you know, try to exit their zone as quickly as they can, push it to the forwards and get on the attack. And for the most part, I mean, you know, these past couple of games, you can really see how the young kids are really starting to come alive.
Not only that, but I mean, I feared Washington because of their recent record against the Bruins and all the talent that they have. And you know, it looked like, I don't know, once in a while the Bruins might be getting pushed around. But I didn't see that happen in this series. It looked like Washington tried to push him around a little bit, and the Bruins answered. So, Coach, how do you evaluate the size, the toughness, both physical and mental toughness of the Bruins?
Well, I think whenever you're winning, your mental toughness just grows. You know, you're starting to play in tight games. I think every game was decided by a goal,
right,
up until last night. The first three overtime. So, you know, you're learning how to play in tight situations, and which is great, you know, to be able to come through on the winning side of those, because, you know, you gain a lot of confidence in doing that. They try to insert Kevin Miller just to, you know, keep Wilson and a couple of these other guys, Hagman,
right,
Hathaway, and a couple of other guys honest, because, you know, you play different when you have a guy like Miller on the ice, because you're going to have to answer the bell in a big way.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, this poor kid just can't stay healthy. It's sad, because he does add a real tough dimension. I think I put him in the top two or three toughness the whole league. I mean, he's that tough. And he's just, you know, simple player. He gets it and he moves it. That's it. He doesn't try to be anything more than that. So I think right now they've got, you know, the offensive guys going, you got your big guys contributing. And, you know, from a defensive standpoint, with the way Rask is playing, when your goaltender's playing that well in front of you, it just exudes confidence throughout the lineup, especially with your D. Because, you know, if you make a mistake, he's going to be right there for you. So that changes a lot of things. And right now they're just playing with so much confidence. They're a dangerous team.
This has been great, great, exciting hockey, I'm telling you. It's been absolutely amazing. And from my standpoint, I wanted to mention this the other night, was I can't believe the speed of the game. I mean, is it faster or is it just my eyeballs? I mean, they get it out of the puck. I mean, they get it out of the zone. The quickness, the moves, the tape-to-tape passes and stuff, it seems so fast. Is it kicked up a notch in the playoffs, the whole speed of the game?
Well, the first rounds are usually the hottest rounds, believe it or not, because everybody's just laying it out there, physical. Mm-hmm. And then after the second round, you know, you're basically trying to stay injury-free and just play the game. But it's so taxing on your body, especially the way these guys play. They're bigger, they're stronger, they're more, you know, they skate quicker. Everything is so more amped up now than I've ever seen it. And if you want to see quick, you haven't even seen Colorado yet.
Uh-oh.
Colorado.
Uh-oh.
Ridiculous. I think, you know, that's the team that I would favor to win the cup. I mean, they've got everything. Goaltending, their defense is ridiculous. The power play, if you take a penalty against them, it's in the net. And their forwards are ridiculous. I think the game in general is much faster. And I think when you see the types of defensemen, the undersized guys on all these teams that are, you know, really the guys that push pucks up and jump in the play, it adds a whole different dimension to the game. And it's great for the game because the pace is always, especially in playoffs, usually on 10.
Yeah, it's nuts. I was in. Now, before I let you go, Coach, I have to ask you about the perfection line, as it's called, because, man, they came through big. And Patrice Bergeron, we talked about it before, my favorite player, maybe one of my favorite all time. He just, he just gets it done. But the three of them, tell me about what you see in the play of those three front guys with Pastrnak, Bergeron, and Marchand.
I mean, they're all, it's amazing. Usually when you have guys, you know, like that, you really need a selfless mentality, which they all have. You know, usually you put three guys like that together, you know, there's not enough pucks made in North America to keep them happy. You know, they all want it.
Yeah.
These guys distributed to each other so selflessly that the chances they get, they make it look easy because they're that good at holding and then dishing for a great scoring chance. I mean, Pastrnak, I felt bad from the first couple of games. I'm like, oh, they're going to be all over this kid. But now you can start to see, you know, you just get that first one, and then all of a sudden, you know, you get going again. Bergeron. He's just, you know, so special. He's probably in the top five all-time Bruins ever, on and off the ice. But I think the respect he gets and the way he plays the game, the big goals just come off his stick. And, you know, when they have the cup run to now, I mean, his goals are so timely that changed the game. And just the way he plays, he's just special. And then Marchand, in a little ball of hate, I don't think there's anybody better in the game at the role they play than him.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, he's really turned himself into an unbelievable player. I mean, he can that one-timer he scored in overtime in game, so that was ridiculous. But just everything he does, I mean, you got to let him play, too. You can't try to put the reins on him. You know, he plays on the edge. Yeah, he's going to get that penalty, and hopefully a penalty kill can come through. Unfortunately, it didn't the other night. But then he comes right back and changes the game. So, you know, I just think those three together are so dangerous. And now you have a true, you know, third line as well and second line. And they're dangerous. And they are very dangerous. And that perfection line, you know, you need your big players to be your best players. And right now, you know, certainly as evident as the closeout game, which is always the toughest, They just took over last night.
Yeah, I remember a couple of years ago when people were all over Bergeron, and he was playing with, what, a broken shoulder or cracked rib or something, whatever the hell it was.
Yep.
And he was still out there making, you know, winning faceoffs and stuff. It's just amazing how good they are and how tough they are. You know, Dale, before I let you go, I'm going to ask you two things. The last thing will be, you know, what do you see coming up and or your overall idea or analysis of the NHL playoffs right now. But I just want to ask you, you mentioned – you know, Bergeron's big goals. And I remember the Tampa Bay game. I think it was the year they won the Stanley Cup when they beat Tampa 1-0 in overtime. And there were no penalties in that game. Do you remember that game?
I vaguely, not really.
Okay, well, that was one where every single shot up and down the ice, it looked like it was going in, sort of like the Super Bowl the Patriots played a couple of years with. And then Bergeron came through in overtime. But it was like a perfect game. No penalties, overtime, 1-0. And I don't know if that was it couldn't have been the seventh game, but it was one of those games, and it was super. All right, let me ask you about your overall opinion.
All I really remember was the Toronto overtime when they came back and tied it.
Oh, yeah.
That was unbelievable.
That was the same year, and Bergeron, I think, scored two goals. He got the tying game goal and then the game winner.
They could have been eliminated right there, and then he had the huge breakaway goal in Vancouver, too.
Yes, yes. Okay. Yeah, well, he's a Hall of Famer. Dale, what about the playoffs overall? The Bruins will have either Islanders or
Pittsburgh
coming up next, and they've had a tough time with both of them, haven't they?
Yeah, but they've had a tough time with Washington. Playoffs are different.
Okay,
you know, you got to have short term memory. You turn those things right into positives. You know, so what? That was a regular season. It's a different kind of season. There's been all different, situations that have happened to players and everything else this season. You just gotta, you know, your coaches are so smart with this stuff. They find a way to deflect all the past and just turn everything into the now. And these guys are pros. They'll be ready. But reckon, you know, the past is the past. Clean slate. Just go out, keep playing your game. Try to get the splits on the road. Make it a home ice advantage where you're very good. And I see, you know, I mean, the Islanders, they had a tough time with them, and then they had a tough time with Pitt. But guess what? You know, now they just proved they can get through a series the way they did in the first round against their arch nemesis. Now anybody coming on now, you know, continuing with those two, you know, Pittsburgh and the Islanders, it's just another tough series. But you play your game, you play together, you stay out of the box. You set the pace. The way you goaltending's going, that conference is going to help you.
All right.
I like the Bruins.
Spoken like a coach, man. That's Dale Dunbar, who was Winthrop High School hockey coach, also an NHL agent. With MSO News Sports, I'm Rick Moore.
This season, start with a winning mortgage rate from your hometown team. Whether you are thinking about buying a new home or condo or refinancing your existing one, our loan rates are among the lowest anywhere. Check out our full menu of rates and terms and apply online 24/7 at institutionforsavingsloans.com. Institutionforsavings.com, member FDIC, DIF, equal housing lender.
Hi, folks. This is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. And if you're planning to replace the windows in your home, I have just two words for you. Anderson Windows. Anderson is the most trusted name in windows throughout the United States. See the complete line of Anderson Windows on display at Moynihan Lumber in Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or visit us at moynihanlumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
All right, that was Dale Dunbar. Great talking with Coach Dunbar. Boy, does he know his stuff, and I love talking with Dale, not only about the Bruins, but also just hockey in general. And he is a defensive whiz. I mean, he played defense in the pros, and he coaches defense in high school. So great listening to him. Tonight, there's all kinds of playoff stuff going on in basketball and in hockey. Local teams not playing, including the Red Sox. High school's in full swing. We hope to have a scoreboard for you tonight, later on. We'll be talking with Hamilton Wenham High School baseball coach, in a little while too, Reggie Maidman, who, the team is 6-2 right now in the Baker division of, the Kepan League. Newburyport flying high at 7-0. They are out in front easily, in the Kinney. Pawtucket at 5-3, Triton at 4-3, North Reading 3-4, Linfield 2-5 in the Kinney. And in the Baker, with the Generals on top at 6-2, Rockport nipping at the heels, 5-3, Amesbury at 4-3, Georgetown, Manchester are 6, and Ipswich after that. Gloucester baseball, Gloucester softball coach doing pretty well.
Yes, Coach Gentile and Coach Nicastro always have their teams really, really well prepared, and they're fine for, I think, 4-2. 5-2 for the boys' baseball team.
Yeah, and the girls I think are 5-1, and the boys' big game tonight at should be over almost by now at Marblehead, Gloucester and Marblehead, and of course Coach Giardi has his team always prepared as well, and love coach's reports here. He checks in almost after every single game, win or lose, and a really amazing coach coaching three sports and knowing all that stuff. We're going to take a quick break, Coach, and we're going to get connected with Gary Larrabee, golf writer, sports historian, and see what's on his mind with the PGA. We'll be right back.
Did you grow up in an alcoholic or dysfunctional home? Were you abused or suffered childhood trauma at the hands of a parent or caregiver? Have you tried self-help or counseling without success? ACA can help. ACA is a 12-step recovery program for adults whose lives are affected as a result of being raised in an alcoholic or dysfunctional family. To find out how others like you have found healing from traumatic childhoods, go to adultchildren.org. That's adultchildren.org.
This season, start with a winning mortgage rate from your hometown team. Whether you are thinking about buying a new home or condo or refinancing your existing one, our loan rates are among the lowest anywhere. Check out our full menu of rates and terms and apply online 24/7 at institutionforsavingsloans.com. Institutionforsavings.com, member FDIC, DIF, equal housing lender.
All right, Gary Larrabee has joined us now, and Gary, I'm guessing, let me take a stab here. You're going to start with the PGA?
Why not?
Okay.
Obviously a very exciting day for everybody who loves competitive and heartbreaking and breathtaking golf, and we all have to be quite happy that Phil Mickelson, who can be arguably be called the most popular player amongst American golf fans. Great to see Phil win a major, become the oldest winner of a major at 50, almost 51, and Tiger even congratulated him last night, but I'm sure Tiger's saying, oh, I wish I could have been there to play.
Yeah, even Jack sent him congratulations, sending the effect that, 46 isn't 50. Great job.
So true. Because the big thing, though, guys, is that Phil puts on quite a show when he wins or loses, and I can't imagine the depths of disappointment if Phil had let that one slip away yesterday to one of the least popular players on tour amongst the fans or the players, Brooks Koepka, who was my choice, or Louis Westhuizen from South Africa. So we have an American champion we can be proud of, and all we can wonder is see if Phil can win another one at the U.S. Open next month in San Diego. But great to see he still has an amazing game and very, very graceful champion. Tim, I just thought that, he had so many chances yesterday to blow it, but he didn't. And he kept his wits and made the shots he had to make down the stretch, particularly on 18. He had a very big drive. That was okay, and he made a terrific second shot, and that took him home, and he's got six majors, guys, which isn't too bad.
No, not at all. I wonder what the impact had of being on top at the end of day one and then finding a way to stay there on day two, and how that played into the mental aspect of his game that, he went from missing cuts to, no top 20s at all this year to suddenly, man, it's here. The game is here. The game is back. I can keep this. I can keep doing this. And how that played on him mentally, as much as the physical aspect of the game of making shots.
And, of course, a few weeks ago, he was leading a tournament after the first round, then disappeared from the leaderboard. So he was certainly fighting a few gremlins yesterday, and all week, really. But, my goodness, he must have liked the golf course because, overall, he was steady Eddie for 4 days and was always right there. And a lot of guys could have challenged him, and he was willing and able to fight off all of those challenges, especially when we thought Koepka was in a position to win his fifth major, his third PGA. It didn't happen. But let's face it, guys, Mickelson is America's number one golf favorite these days, even ahead of Tiger, if you ask me.
Yeah, well, we're just talking about it before we called you, Gary, and Phil is just like the family guy that goes out on the weekend and plays golf with just about anybody. There's no fuss, there's no muss, there's no stains on him. He's not full of bravado. He doesn't say, "Here's my game, it's in your face." He goes out there and he keeps plugging at it and plugging at it. And that's what most of us do when we play that game. And it's had its highs and lows for him. And I think a lot of people can identify with him because of that.
I agree. And he's a regular guy. He treats everybody with a wonderful amount of respect. He loves to interact with the fans, young and old, before, during, and after a round. So this puts him in a very special place. Six majors, same number as Nick Faldo, Lee Trevino. He's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Tied for 11th overall in the majors category. Jack, of course, leads with 18. And we all have to wonder, the only thing Phil could do to outdo himself, after what he pulled off yesterday would be to, in fact, finally win a U.S. Open next month in San Diego at Torrey Pines and finally complete the Grand Slam of Majors Golf. He hasn't done that yet, and that would be even a more incredible story than what we saw him write yesterday.
Yeah, Gary, I caught some of it Friday, and I was looking at Koepka, and I'm thinking, oh, my God, he's DeChambeau Jr. He is all bulked up. He's thick throughout the chest and in the torso. And I'm thinking, when he first started on the tour, I'm thinking, I don't remember him like this. And all of a sudden, he's doing the bulk up like DeChambeau. And, if it helps his games, that's fine. But I'm going like, ooh. And then I saw Phil at the post-game conference where he was standing against the blue top background, and he was standing at the mic, and I'm thinking, wow, has he slimmed down? Holy Moses. I mean, he looked fitter than I have ever seen him playing on the tour. And I'm thinking, that has to have maybe finally come to fruition of aiding his game, where he's leaner, he's stronger, you know, he's not carrying as much baggage around, so he's fitter, he's not as tired late into the rounds.
Possibly true. I would disagree respectfully, Tim. I think Koepka has pretty much always looked like an NFL fullback, as I can remember him, and obviously that didn't change. Still a little frumpy out there, but I think he is less frumpy and less heavy set, if you will, than he used to be, although he's still carrying some extra baggage down that midriff section. And but he overcame it all. He's still got a great, unbelievable short game, and I want to see him win the U.S. Open at Torrey Pines next month.
Yeah.
All right. What else you got, Gare?
Let's give a little tip of the fedora to Nick Macario, former St. John's Prep, St. Anselm, last year's Dick Haskell Mass Golf Player of the Year, who just two weekends ago, he won the Norfolk County Amateur, the first individual event really on the Massachusetts Amateur Tournament Trail. He shot 5 under par at Presidents down there in Quincy. Still got some very serious game. You may have noticed, guys, where he teamed up with Mike Taylor for 2-time Mass Amateur Champion. They had qualified, and they competed over the weekend at the U.S. Amateur Football Championship. They shot 138. It took 135 to make the cut and get into four-ball match play, which started today. Nonetheless, Macario's playing a lot of golf. I call these guys almost everything they could possibly play, professional amateurs. But the fact is, Nick's still got some great game. Not this coming weekend, but in 2 weekends, he will be playing in the Hornblower Memorial down at Plymouth. And we'll see if he can keep his winning ways together as an individual player.
Gary, I was listening on Friday to the Open, and I told Rick this one. And the commentator mentioned that on that particular day in 1974, a 62-year-old golfer finished third, and it was his third-place finish in a row. Who was it?
Sam Snead?
Oh, I knew I couldn't get it past you. Yes, it was Sam Snead. Yep. 62 years old, and he finished third in 3 consecutive tournaments. My God.
Sam, no, amazing. He was amazing, and of course, Sam won. He did not win. He might have won 4 majors or 5. I know he won a couple of Masters, but the slammer, he had the most fantastic swing, the most beautiful swing, and he did play until his 50s and 60s very impressively, but now we're seeing it from all these guys. I mean, Simone Biles, the gymnast, she's doing it at an advanced stage, and Brady's doing it in football at 43, and now Mickelson at 50. Who's next on this hit parade of people playing at the very top of their potential at very advanced stages?
Yeah, I just thought that was just an amazing statistic to throw out there. I'm going, wow.
I agree.
Golf's
amazing that way, guys. And, you know, golf can disappoint. Golf can exhilarate us. Mm. And we certainly had a lot of exhilaration flying around American golf courses and beer pubs and everywhere else late yesterday afternoon, early yesterday evening.
And nobody wore a fedora better on the golf course.
Indeed.
What's on the agenda for Friday in the Salem News?
Well, it's going to be, I don't know if it'll be Friday, Rick, but the next column coming up will be paying salute to one of Lynn's favorite golfing sons, who is right now taking part in his 35th year as the head golf professional at one of our favorite public golf courses. We're not going to give you any more hints, but
right.
The next time the column shows up, it'll be all about that fine young man.
Okay.
35 years at the same club, and a great, great face and North Shore Golf.
All right. We're going to take next Monday off, so we'll see you in 2 weeks.
Sounds great. See you in 2 weeks.
All right, Gary. Thank you so much.
Take care, guys.
All right.
See you, Gary.
Talk to you later. That's Gary Larrabee, golf writer and sports historian. I liked the, there was a cutaway during the program yesterday on the PGA, and it showed the big three walking together. Did you see that?
No.
It was, on the golf course somewhere, some tournament where all three guys, you know, Arnold Palmer, Jack Nicklaus, and Gary Player.
Gary Player, yeah.
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 And,
I've seen that picture.
And it's just like, it just brings you back, what, 40 years instantly. It's, oh my, I mean,
40.
It's like they're right here.
50 years.
Wait a minute. Hold on. They played in the 60s and 70s, didn't
yeah.
they? Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So yeah, it's 50 years plus. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh yeah. What? I mean, and those guys had panache.
Oh yeah.
They had style.
Style. They definitely
you know?
Style. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
They had
yep.
the Gary Player in the all black and
Arnie with his sweaters.
Yep.
And they're just so smooth. All of them. Man, they were good. All right. We're gonna turn it over right now to the Hamilton Wyndham baseball coach. Then we come back. We'll have Mike Grenier talk some basketball. So this is MSO News Sports. I'm Rick Moore along with Tim Kearns. So please to stay with us. I'm Rick Moore on MSO News Sports. Time to be joined now by Hamilton Wyndham baseball coach Reggie Maidman. And coach, welcome to MSO.
Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure.
Well, you know, a funny ride for Coach Maidman at Hamilton Wyndham. Tell us a little bit about what's happened in the last couple of years. A long-time coach, you missed a season and now you're back. Well, you really didn't miss a season.
Right. After 2019, it was, you know, I wanted to, you know, take a step back and buying a house, getting married. I got two young kids. Stepped down for the year, COVID hit and the season never happened, and I missed it. I missed the kids, I missed building the relationships with them. My wife gave me the A-OK to go back, so I reached back out to, you know, Hamilton when I saw the job open, and it's all history now.
That's a good story, because it's very important that we get that some support from our significant others. Otherwise,
you can say that again.
Yeah, otherwise it just doesn't work. So that's good. Glad to hear it, Coach. And I want to start most recently and then work our way backwards, because over the weekend you guys picked up a 5-0 win over North Reading, and that's your 100th career win. Congratulations.
Thanks, Rick. I appreciate that. I mean, I have the easy job. I mean, these kids got to come out and make the plays and do the work, but you know, I have the easy job. This is all on, you know, the teams and the staff I had. You know, we don't talk much about those milestones. You know, we go for the next day.
Absolutely. I totally get that. And let's talk a little bit about the team, because we've been talking all season long with all the coaches about COVID and, you know, its effects and all this other stuff. But here we are. The lights are back on. The sun's out. It's shining brightly. And you guys are in the transition of that right now. What's been the effect of, you know, in the last 3, 4, 5 weeks in terms of transitioning from the pandemic to getting out of it, in terms of, and again, in terms of your kids and practice, that kind of thing?
Right. The big thing for me was the shortened preseason. I mean, we only had a week. Usually it's almost 3 weeks. That affected installation offensively, defensively. That affected, you know, where our pitchers were, you know, their pitch counts, how many they could get up to. I think now that we've started slow and kept our kids, you know, sub 50 in games, and, you know, this past week we've gotten them up to 90, I think they're starting to get back into the swing of, you know, normal baseball. The no-mask thing is beneficial, obviously, for, you know, pitcher-catcher. I mean, it wasn't really too much of an issue with your, you know, other fielders, but, you know, it's good to have some normalcy, especially for these kids. I mean, they've put up with a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And being able to be on the baseball field with your friends is just a way to get back to normalcy.
Oh, yeah, and take off those masks and be able to see the kids smile and all that other stuff. But and again, a big but, you know, your seniors were only sophomores a couple of years ago. So what has that gap meant in terms of leadership? Because your seniors and juniors now haven't played since they were freshmen and sophomores.
Right. So my seniors, I was lucky enough in 19 to have four of them with us in 19, and they were starters. So I made them captains when I got appointed the position because they were the four players that played for me, you know, knew how we ran practice and stuff like that. So, you know, that was huge. Especially having summer baseball was important because these kids still play together throughout the summer. I have 14 seniors.
Okay.
So
wow.
They've known each other for a long time. They've played a lot of competitive baseball, and that has helped us tremendously in the beginning season with practice and positional-wise and talking to the captains, can we move this kid here? Do you think he'll be successful there? Because like you said, I have a junior who was a sophomore, a freshman catcher for me, catching now. So thank God he played summer Antonelli baseball. And then same thing for the one sophomore I have playing every day, Will Cook. He had a lot of summer baseball. So baseball-wise, they were lucky to have summer. But you can see, I mean, there was some rust. There was some definite rust on everybody.
Yeah, okay.
You know, it took a couple games, and having these kids play together for a long time already is huge. I mean, there's a on any given day, I can start nine seniors, and they all play. So that has been very beneficial to us as a program.
Absolutely. And, of course, you've got some multi-sport athletes on the team. A couple just jump right off the page from football and basketball. So tell me a little bit about who's done it for you, who your leaders are, Coach, in terms of the record so far.
Right. I mean, our captains are huge. Carter Coffey is a three-sport athlete, technically four this year because he got to play football. You have Luke McClintock, who is also a dual-sport athlete. You have Ryan Hutchinson, another dual-sport athlete. And then Tobin Clarks-Goldsfeld, who's been a starter infielder for me since his sophomore year. That four group of seniors have been our leaders on and off the field. You know, they're out of school now, so, you know, they're doing BP on their own at the park before practice even starts. Getting together for, you know, breakfast on days of games, you know, just hanging out together, getting to the field early, raking it, cleaning it, you know, cleaning the dugouts. Just stuff like that has really helped us with those four senior leaderships and obviously multi-sport athletes. Ryan Monahan as well, another three-sport athlete.
Yep.
He's helped us a lot. He's not a captain, but, you know, on any given year he could have been. You know what I mean? So those multi-sport athletes have definitely helped us. Matt Patello is another one that played basketball. Now he's with us. I've always preached three sports. I mean, specification has really hurt a lot of sports, and I think that is one that hurts baseball.
Yeah, we hear that more and more often, and I'm a former teacher myself, and we all support the multi-sport athlete. Get out there and compete and get all those muscle groups going in the course of a year. Coach, we went away this weekend, my wife and I, for the first time in 16 months. We met up with my daughter's my daughter's godparents. And we had a weekend getaway in North Conway. And just to get away and see the lights come back on, so to speak, was exciting for me and for all of us. I can imagine what you and the kids are beginning to feel right now, because this thing is getting really back to normal. As you said, the kids can see each other, be with each other. There has to be sort of an emotional lift, isn't there?
I mean, you just saw it in practice when the MIAA announced, you know, masks off. Again, I haven't seen a smile on a kid. I didn't even know a senior had a beard. I'm like, Andrew, you can grow a beard?
Okay.
It turned these kids' frowns upside down, that's for sure. It's just been a good thing to get back to a little bit of normalcy.
Absolutely. All right,
Wait,
Coach.
North Conway, great spot. Did you get to go to Vito's?
No, we went to the Tuckerman's and May Kelly's is where we end up having dinner. And I'm a skier, so I go up. So where's Vito's?
Vito's is right in, like, downtown, kind of like that plaza behind Zeb's.
Okay.
It's a great Italian restaurant.
All right.
Great Italian.
Oh, okay. My wife is Italian. I'm going to write that down right now.
All right.
Vito's.
It's a good spot.
Okay.
Great arancini.
All right. I'll get back to you then.
It's one of my go-tos because we have a camp up in Freedom on Lake Ossipee. So we tend to travel up to North Conway often.
Absolutely. We absolutely love it up there. We'll talk more about that later, because I got to get ready for our live program here in just a second, which we're going to put this into the live program, which is kind of strange. Coach, a highlight so far, you guys are 6-2. What's been important so far running that record up and leading the Cape Ann League South there?
I mean, obviously starting pitching. I think that's probably what everyone said to you now, right? We have two college-bound starters. They're a 1A and a 1-2 with McClintock and Hutchinson. they've just grabbed the ball. They've thrown strikes. They've challenged the other team. It's great to be able to have that, you know, kind of dual-headed dragon. And then our relief pitching. Behind those early in the season, we weren't stretching out our starting pitching, so relief pitching was huge. And we had some kids come in, and they did the job and, you know, secured some close wins. Situational baseball is what we've been really surprised with as a coaching staff so far. Again, we didn't have much time. We didn't have much time to install defense, install
right.
offensive plays.
Yep.
And throughout games that we've won, we've handled situational baseball. And I give credit to these kids who are seniors. They've played a lot of baseball together, and they are prepared for these situations. So I really have to give that to the seniors on situational baseball.
That's cool. Now, what's coming up this week?
We are home versus Triton, and then Saturday at Pentucket.
When's the Triton game?
Triton is Wednesday at 3:45 at Patton.
All right. I want to talk with you some more, Coach, so I'll give you a buzz next week or the week after. This thing is moving along so fast, the season is. I got a million more questions to ask you.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Coach. We'll talk to you later. Stay safe and be well. Have fun.
You as well. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Reg. That's Reggie Maidment. I'll get it out here. Reggie Maidment, who is the once and future coach of the Hamilton Wenham baseball team with MSO News Sports. I'm Rick Moore. All right, we're back live now, and we're joined by Mike Grenier, sports journalist. And, Mike, welcome back to MSO. How you doing?
I'm doing fine. You know, I listened to my longtime friend and former colleague, Gary Larrabee, with you guys. And I'll tell you what, Rick, you know, you have a great show, and you and Tim do a great job. And can you find a more knowledgeable golf person in the nation than Gary Larrabee? I doubt that you could.
Well, I'm always amazed. It reminds me of John Ahern when I met him back way back in the 80s from the Boston Globe. He was their golf writer, and he did yacht races, believe it or not. That's when I met him.
Yeah, I remember that.
And he had a fedora also. And same thing, the names, the numbers that rolled off his – and that was before the Internet. But no one's more knowledgeable than Gary, and I think we here on the North Shore. North Shore 104.9 has him on Saturday mornings too. I think they still do that on the sports
desk.
And we are so lucky to have that kind of a resource here.
You know, I read his weekly contribution to the Salem News that also appears in the Gloucester Times, and he pays tribute to one particular person, but in paying tribute to that one person, he throws out about 30 other names that are connected with the individual.
Sure, absolutely.
And it's like this litany of individuals, like the article he just did on Haskell. Oh, my God. Well, and he knew this guy, and he worked with this guy, and it's just marvelous reading.
Hey, you know, I just thought he's like the Dr. Fauci of golf.
All right, we got to get to it, Mike. And
basketball, sure.
You got the whole thing there, I'm going to sit here and tell you both. I did not watch the game on Sunday. I took the weekend off.
Yeah.
I read about it, and I turned it over to both of you guys.
Well, you know, Tim, I don't know. It's funny. I watched as much NBA basketball playoffs as I could over the weekend. And my biggest takeaway, Rick and Tim, from all the games is that when you watch, I think, maybe 14 of the 16 teams, they all play harder than the Boston Celtics. And it's
wow.
very obvious when you watch the Knicks play, the Miami Heat, and most impressively, the Memphis Grizzlies, who knocked off Stephon Curry in the playoff round, heavily favored and playing at Golden State. And then last night, they knock off the team with the best record in the NBA, the Utah Jazz, in the number one versus number eight seeding in the Western Conference. And I watch all these teams, and I say, they play defense, they just play much harder than the Celtics. That's the takeaway that I got, the biggest takeaway from watching, you know, the Milwaukee Bucks, all these teams. The only team I think that tries to coast like the Celtics is the L.A. Lakers, and that's because they have Anthony Davis and LeBron James, and look what happened to them last night. They got beat, you know, by the Phoenix Suns, who are a hungry team. So you have a lot of teams that are hungry to win, to advance in the playoffs, and I see the Celtics, and to me, they're lallygagging and playing as lazily in the playoffs as they did in the regular season.
Well, you know, we talked about it a couple of weeks ago, and you know about the desire to play defense. Defense comes out of a desire to stop your opponent,
right?
And they just don't seem to play even offense with any desire. No, you know, they're not aggressively setting pace. They're not aggressively running around the floor looking for openings, looking to cut to the basket. It's like, oh, well, you know, here comes Brown. Here comes Tatum. Okay, well, they're going to score, so we'll kind of like watch what they do. And there's no sense of urgency. Every game right now, every possession should be played with a sense of urgency, and they just don't have it.
Well, I mean, it's funny you should mention that, Tim, because if anybody on North Shore watched the Knicks versus the Atlanta Hawks last night, that was an old-fashioned slugfest. Guys getting after it on every possession. And it's kind of a low-scoring game, and Trae Young scored with 0.5 seconds left, and the Heat pulled out the win. And you know, I just kind of like open mouth watching these teams play hard, and then you watch the Celtics, who do have some talent. And they just don't play nearly as hard. That's what struck me. And, you know, you mentioned about the defense and all that. And, it's funny, in comparing the big three of both teams, without Jaylen Brown, obviously the third guy has to be Evan Fournier. You know, the big three for the Celtics scored 49 points on Saturday night, and the big three for the Nets scored 82. So 82 to 49. So if you're going to make up that gap, it has to come from the bench or somewhere. You have Robert Williams, who was actually, Rick, very super impressive the other night, 9 block shots.
Wow.
In 23 minutes. That's even our guy Bill Russell didn't do that.
Wow,
okay?
Yeah.
So that's an astonishing, and even the lordly Kyrie Irving praised Robert Williams after the game, saying his timing is amazing. So, you know, at least he's making a defensive commitment, a defensive effort. But, when Brad Stevens is trying to make up that scoring gap, who does he turn to?
Hmm.
I mean, guys like Grant Williams and Romeo Langford, recent draft picks, didn't even get off the bench. And, you know, I just did a little survey this afternoon. And, you know, Romeo Langford, 2019 draft, was a lottery pick. He was the last lottery pick, number 14 overall. And in his career, 50 games, obviously he's been injury-plagued. But he's averaged 2.7 points. He shot 35% from the floor, 22% on threes. I found 5 guys in the 2019 draft who were drafted well below Romeo Langford. We're talking guys that were drafted 23rd, 24th, 28th, 29th, who are establishing themselves at averaging 12, 13, 14, 16 points per game in their first 2 years. And Romeo Langford is just languished. He can't get even off the bench, even though he's healthy right now. And Brad Stevens needs bench contributions. This guy doesn't even make it off the bench because Brad Stevens can't trust him.
Mm. Well, the team is going to have to undergo a major shakeup in the offseason, Mike, you know, where they're just going to have to cut the dead wood, eat some monetary losses, and just go out and find bodies that really want to play, you know, that have the desire to play, that are willing to run up and down the court, to get into guys' faces, to set a solid pick, and then, oh, yeah, roll to the basket. You know, not just sit there and block somebody and then stand there and wait for the guy to do it on his own. You know, they're an incomplete team.
Yeah.
That plays an incomplete game now.
Yeah, exactly. Obviously, it would help with Jalen. You know, when you're missing Jaylen Brown, an all-star caliber player who was averaging 25 a game. Obviously, you're missing something there. But I still think they'd be down 1-0 in the series, even with Jaylen Brown. And I just, if they could steal a game at the Boston Garden and stretch this out to 5 games, I'll be a bit surprised. But I see this as a short series. You know, I just don't see the Celtics being super competitive, whether they're in Brooklyn or whether they're at the Garden. And I guess the only saving grace for any Celtics fans is the ones who have tickets when they expand the capacity later this week, is that they'll actually be able to say some naughty things to Kyrie Irving when he's on the court for Brooklyn, when he comes to the Garden Friday and Sunday.
Yeah, it's for a lot of fans, you know, especially the way Brooklyn finished the season, as strong as they did, people had to be looking at this going, oh, this isn't going to be good. You know, no Jaylen, you know, and okay, Tatum can go off for 60, but can we win the game?
Right. And, you know, it's funny, you know, Tatum, I think because he's a mild-mannered kid, he doesn't show a lot of emotion. You know, he only shot 6-for-20 Saturday night, and Kemba Walker was 5-for-16, and Fournier was 3-for-10. That's 16-for-46. and those are the guys that have to score for you. So when those three guys aren't scoring, as unfortunately all three of them on the same night didn't do much scoring or shooting well, you have to look for other guys. And of all people, Marcus Smart, who wasn't a great shooter, was like 7 for 13. He had 16, 17 points. So, but Brad Stevens, I feel, in a sense, is handcuffed in the playoffs because every coach shortens their bench in the postseason. Every coach goes to 7 or 8 players total. But Brad Stevens has even fewer options, I think, than a lot of coaches because who are you going to throw? You're not going to throw Romeo Langford in there. If you're not going to throw Grant Williams in there, you're not going to throw Carson Edwards in there because they have not proven themselves over the first couple of years. They just haven't. Peyton Pritchard, very nice pickup. Rookie year, having a good year, but he's kind of smallish, and defensively he can be a liability because he's like Kemba Walker. He's too small to guard the bigger people. And unless if he's hitting his three-pointers, he could be an asset on that particular night. If he's not hitting his threes, then you can't play him too much because he is going to be a defensive liability. So
yeah, but you know what, Mike? Give the kid his chance. You know, he's played well during the season. All right, he's an inch or two short. Let him go out there and harass the ankles of the guy in front of him. You know, make it tough. The kid's earned some playing time here. You know, and maybe you just might be surprised. He might pull a Spud Webb on you.
Yeah.
And go off for, you know, 15, 20 almost in every single game you put him in because the other team's going to go, oh, well, who's this kid, Pritchard? And they're going to look away from him, and he's going to torch him. But
yeah,
give the kid his chance.
He can definitely hurt you from the outside. We've seen it regular season and even in some of the bigger games when he's gotten 18. He's gotten 22 points in a few games. And I think if you're Brad Stevens, what have you got to lose? You know, in other words, like, you know, if you're going to be down 0-2 after the Brooklyn game in Brooklyn tomorrow, what really do you have to lose? So give Peyton Pritchard some playoff experience, this pressure basketball. Let him take his shots. Let him see if he can score, find some angles. And he's very good at driving the ball to the basket. He's very good on a three-pointer. Let's just see if he can score 15, 18, 20 points because you're certainly not getting it from the higher draft picks.
You know, let him run around the court and make the opposing guy defend him and chase him around and get tired.
You know, I agree.
Because if Brett Stevens has to, you know, plays with a shortened lineup, he's only going to have three guys out on the court.
Right.
Those are the only three guys he can depend on. So why put the other two out there?
Yeah. I mean, I agree. You know, why not? Because he's been the most promising of the young players that Ainge has drafted over the last couple of years, and he's been more consistent than the other guys. I mean, Grant Williams, I don't know why he's even on the team because he plays well sporadically. But it's so sporadic that you can't really count on him, certainly in the big series, like against the Brooklyn Nets. And Romeo Langford, to me, is just completely lost. And I guess Aaron Nesmith, I think he's another guy, Tim, that you'd have to give him a shot because down the stretch, the last 10 games of the season, he had 3 or 4 16-point games.
Right.
And I think he's earned some playing time. And if you're going to be down 0-2, then let him play a lot of minutes, he and Peyton Pritchard, and let's see what they can do in a playoff situation.
Mike, I know we're running short on time here, but how come they didn't send these kids to the developmental league?
Well, I think because of the pandemic, the G League was abandoned for a season.
Oh, okay.
Right? So I think that'll come back into play this coming season, and certain guys can use some seasoning. But like you said, Tim, overall, the summertime will be a time of reflection and changes. And we hope that Danny Ainge is going to make the appropriate changes to make us a more competitive team next year.
Yeah. Mike, you mentioned the pace and the desire of the other teams that you've been watching. As we wrap this up, what else stands out from the rest of the playoffs early on?
Well, I mean, I tell you, Memphis is an interesting story. I texted Scoonie Penn, after Friday night's game, Scoonie Penn being the former Salem High second-year assistant with the Memphis Grizzlies, and he texted me back. We're talking like 1 o'clock in the morning after the upset, Stephon Curry, and says, "Mike, watch out for us. We're a young team. We're growing." And he was so proud to see those guys win on the road. And then they even bettered that achievement by knocking off the number one seed last night, the Utah Jazz. So, you know, I think the best series, guys, is going to be the Milwaukee-Miami Heat series. Miami won game one by a couple of points, but they're so evenly matched, and it's the number three seed against number six. And Miami, of course, we saw how good they can be. They beat the Celtics last year. A lot of talent on that Milwaukee team, of course. They go about 8 or 9 deep.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, to me, that's going to be an extremely competitive series, a pick'em series. I also think the Knicks series against the Atlanta Hawks is also a great series to watch. Again, a pick'em series. And, of course, the Phoenix Suns are so hungry, they can give the defending champion Lakers a lot of problems, which they did in the first game last night, beating the Lakers outright.
All right. I'm going to give Tim the final word because he's always yelling at me that I talk too much. So you got it with Mike. What's up?
I scored another set of tickets to see Tom Rush in October. I've been waiting 50 years to see him again, and I'm going to see him twice this year.
Rick, if you got 10 seconds, 30 seconds.
You
here,
bet. You bet,
you
Mike.
You mentioned seeing the Rolling Stones back in, what was it, 74 or something?
No, it was in the 60s.
Earlier than that?
Yep.
At Salem State?
Yep. Yep.
They what year was that then? Was it 74?
Oh, God, no. It was 64. And that was, I believe they played at Manning Bowl. I'm not
Manning
sure.
Manning Bowl. Yeah. That's where that kid got killed.
Yes.
The Hells Angels.
Okay.
There was some kind of a smoke bomb. I had a friend from Andover who went to that show. He had to climb the fence to escape the smoke and the chaos. It was a dangerous situation, but you're right. That was a chaotic, famous chaotic concert, the Manning Bowl. But you saw him at Salem State?
I didn't. My ex-wife did, I believe.
Okay.
She mentioned that, and that was in, it's the same year, 64, I believe.
Right. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I have a friend who actually saw the Beatles at the Boston Garden.
Aha. All right.
It was only like 11 or 12 years old,
yep.
But she has a great memory, and she has to remember every little. Of course, you didn't hear the music. As you know, when the Beatles
right.
played and there was Beatles Mania, you just heard the noise of the crowd. They couldn't elevate the music above the noise of the crowd.
Yeah, well, that's why they stopped doing live shows.
That's right.
They were at Shea Stadium, and they couldn't even hear themselves from the speakers playing back at them. So Paul McCartney said, "We weren't even singing lyrics. We were singing nonsense." And the
right.
crowd continued to yell. So we decided no more shows.
It continues, right, Tim? I mean, the same thing happened. To the point where I believe their concerts only lasted 30 to 35 minutes.
Yeah.
Well, my favorite...
12 or 13 or 14, and then get off the stage because they didn't have the amplifiers to project to the crowds back
right.
then.
My favorite was the garden visit of The Who when Keith Moon collapsed off his drum set after the first song. And he fell over backwards. They carted him off to the hospital. So the other three guys are standing there. Pete Townsend gets on the mic and says, "Is there a drummer in the house?
Oh my goodness!
Who knows our playlist?" And there's a kid who raised his hand. He said, "Come on up." And the kid played with The Who that night and knew the Who's playlist and played okay.
Wow! You were there, Rick? You were
no,
there?
No. I read about it. I read about it in the Boston Globe.
Hey, okay. Mike, have you ever talked to anybody who's heard about more concerts that his friends have been to than Rick? Hasn't been to a concert in his life, but he knows somebody who has.
Yeah, but I...
You know, it's so funny. In a similar story, Rick, if we can wrap this up, 10 years after, which had a great...
I actually saw them at the Garden.
Right. Now, Tim, the thing I remember the most is, you, of course, smoking was allowed in
yep.
those days.
Oh, yeah.
The Garden and elsewhere. I was across at the other end of the stage... Away from the stage, in other words, the other end. I could not see the stage because of all the smoke filtering down from the upper and obviously the lower level of the old Boston Garden. It had to be 365 degrees in there.
Oh yeah,
and you could not see. You could barely make out the figures on the stage.
Okay, who opened for them? We probably that was really like 71, right?
Around there somewhere.
Okay,
who opened them? You got me there. They're
still playing today.
They're still playing today.
Tower of Power.
Oh, my goodness.
Open for them.
I love that.
All right, Mike,
yep.
I want you to make note of this. I have a story to tell you about a concert I actually went to at the Boston Garden in 1981.
Yep.
And it's a story about what you said, the smoking in the garden.
Yep. So,
and the Moody Blues, they had regrouped. It was their first tour date back in 1981.
Okay.
But that's not the story. So remind me to tell you guys that one, all right?
I will do.
Okay,
we'll
thank you.
A couple of weeks then after
yeah, 2 weeks,
Memorial
yeah.
Day holiday.
Yeah, we're not going to do a show next.
He's going to call the guy who went to the concert with him to get the details.
That's right, because I forgot most of the story. But no, I was actually at this one.
Well, people wouldn't believe these stories about how you couldn't see. There was so much smoking, was so prevalent, you really, literally could not see the stage. It's amazing. And this was the days of cigarettes and not just
and cigars and other stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
All right.
Yeah.
You get the hint. All right,
okay,
Mike.
Now, Mike, last question, then you got to go. Who was the lead singer for 10 years after?
The lead singer for 10 years after. Jesus, you got me there again.
Come on, Gary would have known this one.
Go ahead.
Alvin Haley.
Really?
Alvin Haley in 10 years after.
Okay, all right.
I gave Gary a puzzler today that I heard on the... On the golf coverage on Friday, and he had the answer.
Yeah, of course he did.
Yeah.
Of course he did.
It was he's amazing.
Trivia.
Oh, yeah.
And so are you, Mike. I appreciate it. So stay healthy. Have a wonderful holiday weekend next week, and then we'll see you in 2 weeks.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate it so much. Have a great holiday.
Thank you, Mike.
You
we
too,
appreciate
buddy.
It. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Stay safe.
Yep. Yeah,
bye-bye now.
That's Mike Grenier.
I love about talking to him.
Sports journalist. And,
talking to Mike. Hmm? It's all the concerts we go back to.
Well, I...
And all the sports that we have ever gone to in our lives.
My very first concert was that Garden concert in 81 with the Moody Blues. And I saw them every single time they came to the area until about 2 or 3 years ago. And I still see Justin Hayward up at the Shell and Lou.
I've seen them three or four times. And... Twice at the Garden, once at the center. Seen Billy Joel three times.
We'll talk about that later. We'll go. I've seen. Okay, so much for sports. Thank you for being with us. That's Tim Kearns, our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky, Bill Newell, of course, Mr. Everything for us. So we thank you for listening. Tell people about us, please, at msonewsports.com.
Send us in your favorite concert.
There you go.
Let us know where you've been.
And you can email that at, give me a minute here, msonewsports@gmail.com. Yeah, so tell us where you've been, msonewsports@gmail.com, your favorite concert. There you go. All right, that's it for now. I appreciate it. Thank you very much. This is MSO New Sports.